Hey everybody, it's Brad Williams and Adam Ray for the About Last Night podcast. Today's episode is brought to you by White Cloud e-cigarettes.
We're not saying you should start smoking, but if you already do, awesome. And if you've ever wanted to try an e-cigarette, these are the ones to go with. White Cloud e-cigarettes offers over 20 flavors. That's almost as many as Baskin-Robbins. 20 flavors and 6 nicotine strengths. It's cheaper than other e-cigarettes that you'll see at convenience stores and with much more variety. White Cloud e-cigarettes sponsors comedians. They've been doing it for over 2 years now. They've also sponsored comedy festivals like the Boston Comedy Festival and the Orlando Indie Comedy Festival. If you've ever been curious about trying an e-cigarette, I have. Well, the Fling is the low-cost, no-commitment way to do so. And the Fling offers same-day UPS shipping on orders before 6 p.m. Eastern.
But is there a website?
Customers can go to WCESigs.com. That's WCESigs.com.
But we want to make sure our listeners get them for cheap. So is there a coupon code?
To get 25% off of the order, use the coupon code ALNPODCAST. That's ALNPODCAST at WCESigs.com to get your White Cloud e-cigarettes today. And now, enjoy a brand new episode of the About Last Night podcast with Brad Williams and Adam Ray.
Hi-ho!
Hey, everybody, it's Adam Ray for the About Last Night podcast. What an episode today. Holy shit. We went on location for this one. A guest that we've been trying to lock down for a few months now, but hey, he has a giant movie that's in theaters right now, just came out this past weekend, and our boy Jerry Ferrara hooked us up, and we stayed in contact, and then Brad went to a charity event a few nights ago that Bob Saget puts on that was just star-studded. I mean, Don Rickles, John Stamos, Jeff Ross, John Mayer, the entire cast of Entourage, including our guest, who is the writer, creator of my fucking one of my favorite shows of all time, Entourage. And his name is Doug Ellen. I'm sure you've seen it on the credits every time you watch a show. And of course, at the end of the credits for the movie that just came out, of course, with the same name, Entourage the Movie. I went to an advanced screening with Jerry. He was kind enough to let me come along when they did his private screening for the Wisconsin basketball team during the NCAA tournament, and met Doug briefly there, and then Brad met him at this charity show. Couldn't be a cooler dude. Just such a fucking guy's guy. We met him at a hotel in Beverly Hills that he was having a meeting at right after we did the podcast. Gave us an hour and just chatted us up on everything we wanted to hear. His early stand-up days in New York City, which was crazy. Working his way up from the mailroom, which is so crazy when you see a guy this successful to just, you would just assume these people just come to Hollywood and they get these writing jobs and they just, it all starts. But this guy worked from very little to become, you know, one of the most sought after dudes in the business. And obviously everyone wants to work with him and be a part of the Doug Ellen brand, as you see in the fucking show that he created. We talk about how that happens, meeting Mark Wahlberg, becoming buds with, hey, my hometown hero, Russell Wilson, and shares just a lot of fun Entourage stories, and being a writer for the Bonnie Hunt show. There's an incredible story there, too, that I don't think he's ever told before. Follow Doug on Twitter at Mr. Doug Ellen. He's also that on Instagram. And of course, go see Entourage, the movie, in theaters right now. I can't recommend it enough. Even if you're not a fan of the show, it's just a fun fucking ride. An entertaining movie. Story's great. The characters, as you know from watching the show as much as I do, are just so fun. And he crushed it, man. So go see the movie. Follow him on Twitter at Mr. Doug Ellen. Follow me on Twitter at Adam Ray Comedy. Follow Brad on Twitter at Funny Brad. Stand-up comedy. I will be at the Laugh Factory in Los Angeles tonight at 10 o'clock. Get your tickets at laughfactory.com. Of course, you can see me headlining the Irvine Improv tomorrow night at 8 o'clock in Irvine, California. The Irvine Improv, me headlining Comedy Juice. Get your tickets at improv.com. And then in San Diego, I'm going to be headlining the Madhouse Comedy Club downtown San Diego at 8. And then right after that, one of my favorite shows in the country, Beachwood, the great bar show that our boy Josh Nelson has created. I think it's running 5 years strong, and it's one of the best shows in San Diego. It's at Beachwood in the Pacific Beach area. I think it's on Mission Avenue. Check it out. Show up. Pretty sure it's free. They pack it in. It's just a fun fucking insane energy. I'm really pumped to do that show. That'll be around 9:45, 10 o'clock. Of course, that's June 10th, Wednesday in San Diego. And then, of course, I'll be coming to Scottsdale, Arizona, headlining the Scottsdale Laugh Factory in Scottsdale, Arizona, June 25th through the 28th. Get your tickets at laughfactory.com. And then, of course, hometown shows, Bellevue, Washington, The Parlor Live, July 9th through the 11th. Get your tickets at parlorlive.com. Brad Williams, where's he going to be? Well, he's going to be at the Richmond, Virginia Funny Bone this weekend. Go see Brad, Richmond, Virginia Funny Bone. You know, Brad Williams, always a great show. His special Fun Size just came out. You'll probably see a couple of those hits, but you'll probably see a ton of new material, too, because that's what Brad does. And then, of course, Syracuse, New York, Brad Williams, June 18th through the 21st at the Funny Bone in Syracuse, New York. Get your tickets at funnybone.com. EstoyMerchandise.com is where you can get all your ABLN merchandise needs. Mugs, shirts. Come on, Roni and the Quave shirts. They're still out there. They're still ready to be fucking worn by you. Show your support for the podcast. Wear your Roni and the Quave and About Last Night shirts at our shows. We'll sign them for you. Spread the word on the podcast. Tell people to go to AboutLastNightPodcast.com to get all past episodes with Lisa Kudrow, Paul Feig, Melissa McCarthy, Bob Saget, Bobby Lee, Andrew Santino, Adam Devine. The list goes on and on. Steve-O, Dr. Drew. We got some really dope guests coming up. You know, Billy Gardell was one we just had. Our buddy Tone Bell, who's on a new show with Mark Paul Gosselaar, coming out this fall on NBC. That episode's coming up. Brent Morin is coming back to the show for a record-setting fourth appearance on the podcast. And he always brings it super hard when he's on the podcast. Fucking, there's probably a cleaner way I could have said that. Speaking of hard, it gets me hard when you guys comment on the iTunes page for the podcast. Go to About Last Night on the iTunes podcast page. Leave a 5-star rating. Take 2 seconds and just type a comment. You guys are fucking cool. Love the podcast. Brad's a midget. Adam's a Jew. You guys are fun. Whatever it is, take 2 seconds. Leave a comment. Helps us climb the podcast charts. Now that we got all the podcast info out of the way, those are the Twitter handles. That's the merch info. Those are the tour dates. Ladies and gentlemen, sit back, relax, and enjoy a very fun special episode of the About Last Night podcast with the writer and creator of Entourage. Damn. It's Doug Allen.
Well, the weekend's over, so it's time to chat about it. Got a midget and a Jew, so why don't you sit down and listen to our dope podcast during lunch, dinner, or breakfast. Brad Williams and Adam Ray are here for you any time of the day. So come on and treat yourself right. It's About Last Night.
No, we were
sorry,
just going to
go. This is nice.
Right? This is a very sort of, forgive the pun, but Entourage moment right now.
Nice.
I want to talk briefly about how you guys met and then how you and I met, even though it was probably a bigger deal for me than it was for you.
Very big deal for me. Yeah. That was a great screening.
That was a great screening.
It's too bad we couldn't get that victory. One more win.
Fuck,
couple baskets.
Dude.
We were so close.
So you are... So Jerry... I was playing basketball with Jerry, which, by the way, I don't know if he told you, but one of his buddies in that game, like Mike Young, also a buddy of mine, was playing. Mm-hmm. Was on the... Mike Young's like white chocolate, right? On the basketball court. I don't know if you've seen him. All right.
Mike Young's my... first of all, it's my game. That was my game for a decade.
You started that game?
I started that game.
No kidding.
It was taken from me.
Well, let
me
thank you.
It was taken from me. Mike Young is my friend. Mike Young was my first friend in L.A. 22 years ago.
Nice.
Which is really disgustingly insane to even say that out
loud. Wow.
But so, yes, I know Mike Young. I don't want to give him all that credit. He is good. He does have some
worry.
Skills.
Don't worry. Mike Young will give Mike Young
exactly.
all the credit.
Exactly. Why do we need to give him
I guess credit? I was so impressed because Mike, not that he's not an athletic-looking dude, but some of the moves he was making, yeah. I was like, a lot of no-look passes.
Yeah.
And
Mike is a very good athlete and strong, strong hands.
Yeah.
And I don't like that you say he's not an athletic dude because, as Mike likes to tell everyone, everywhere he goes, people go, are you Doug Allen's brother? Because they think like we have some similarities. But he is a very good and very
crafty.
Much stronger than you would think.
Totally.
Yeah.
So after that game, Jerry invites me to a screening that you guys held at Warner Brothers for the Wisconsin basketball team. Now, which was incredible, by the way. I'd never seen Kaminsky. Jerry was telling me that he cried when he met you guys.
I don't know if he cried, but Frank was very excited, and he's probably more excited to meet Jerry than me, although now we've become friends. But my friend Kenny Dichter, who we were just talking about offline, who owns a company called Wheels Up that he just bought like the right to put a blanket over American Pharoah, who just won the Belmont Stakes 20 seconds ago. So everyone of my friends from childhood are freaking out that Kenny just made this bet yesterday and it pulled off. But
By the way, I want a friend so badly. I want to find out one of my friends bought a private jet company so badly.
You know, my friend has been, you know, my friend who helped us get LeBron and Matt Damon and Tom Brady on the show and Russell Wilson. So he introduced me to Wisconsin, which I went to Tulane, but I've become a supporter of Wisconsin since Tulane. We're starting to get better at sports, but we haven't been great.
Sure.
So I've met a lot of great people, and that screening was great for us, you know? And it was nice to meet those guys. They were 2 minutes away from the national championship, which would have been incredible.
Man. I know.
Insane.
So that's your your Wisconsin, and that's I'm very curious about that too, because becoming friends with so many athletes, and now because of the show, like, which Brad and I talk about all the time, is like, to us, the coolest part of this business, when you get to a point, if you're a big sports fan, to where the guys you look up to are now like, want to meet you or are a fan of your shit.
It's the best, you know? And I was just sitting at the Grove, and Calais Campbell from the Cardinals was it's like, hey, Doug, you know? And everyone I'm with is like, how do you know him?
Yeah, dude.
And it is. I'm not jaded enough to not appreciate how great it is to spend time with these people and who are the best at what they do. And not because they're celebrities, just their excellence impressed me and their work ethic and all of that stuff.
So. But how do you balance the fandom? And this is, I guess, what I'm building up to is obviously I'm a diehard Seattle everything. I know you're buds with Russ, but also have ties to the Pats. So when that Super Bowl went down.
That Super Bowl was extremely difficult for me, and it's different. Tom Brady, who I honestly love, is a good acquaintance.
Okay.
Russell Wilson is one of my close friends.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I got to ride it with Russell a little bit because Kenny introduced me to Russell 5 years ago at Wisconsin. And to be honest with you, I had no, you know, I watched a couple of games. I'm like, he looks pretty good to me. I could have never imagined this. And, you know, I was in the locker room at halftime during the Rose Bowl, and Russ walked by and was like, we got this. I mean, the man is the coolest, calmest. I took him out with Jerry Ferrari and Kevin Connolly, I think, a day or two after the NFL draft, and everyone was like, who is he? I'm like, the Seahawks just drafted him. And they were like, as what? I'm like, he's their next quarterback. And everybody was like, yeah, sure.
Yeah, Matt, you know, like, no, Matt Flynn is going to totally pan out.
Matt Flynn had a huge contract. Yeah. Russell he's not a big guy, you know, and you don't look at him and go, he's going to be the starting quarterback who's going to go to the NFC Championship, Super Bowl in his first 3 years. But
yeah, boy, remember that Super Bowl, Brad?
I don't like to talk about that.
Diehard Broncos fan, we went together.
It was very hard for me, though, because I wanted both of them to just achieve, which I think they did. Brady proved, in my mind, he's the greatest to ever play the game by beating that defense in the fourth quarter.
Right.
And Russell had an amazing game. And, you know, I don't like the call, and I'm not just saying this because he's my friend. He threw the ball where it was supposed to be. It's a bad call with the wrong personnel. And if he had Gronk on his team or even, you know, Jimmy Graham, he's not getting knocked over like he's my 11-year-old son. You know, he runs that guy over, and it's a touchdown. But that being said, it's just an obscenely bizarre call.
So, absolutely,
But it was very upsetting, and I was sitting with my son, and I was actually videotaping because he loves Russell. He hasn't really met Tom, but he knows Russell well. So he was just watching, and I was videotaping because the game was over. It was after Kearse made the catch to me.
Oh,
I would have bet every dollar I had the game was
they
over.
Cut to the Tyree catch after that.
So I was videotaping my son, and the heartbreak on his face was, you know. But before those two plays, it was a great game. Russell played great. Tom did what he did, and it's a shame it ended that way.
Now, let me ask you this. Being close friends with him, how much time do you allow before you send a text or any sort of...
Right after. And Russell is... I mean, by the way, Tom, what I know, the limited time I've spent with him, they both have this incredible ability to move forward. It's not like neurotic Jew shit that I have.
Hey, you're preaching to the choir, man.
Because I can't get over it, and I'm telling you, Russell, not that he's over it. He grows from it, and I look at him as an inspiration because he looks at it like something that's going to make him stronger. And you know, it's,
and he's just, I mean, that whole thing that Bill Belichick does when he just goes on to the next one, that's not just a phrase. Like, they literally have that mindset.
It's not fake. And, you know, I texted Russell from the game, you know, and he texted me, just love you, brother, later. And
so I hit him up on Facebook, and he still hasn't gotten back to me.
He will get back to you. He's really one of the nicest people I know.
It's so funny you say that, neurotic Jew. I mispronounced the Via Hafta at my bar mitzvah, and I still haven't gotten over it. And I appreciate you bringing that up. So you grew up in New York.
New York.
Because you were in the Yanks cap.
Yep.
Die hard. You started stand-up comedy?
Yeah.
What got you into that, and then why did you stop doing it?
You know, competing with Mike Young is impossible.
It's always going to go back to
that. I mean, honestly, without bullshit, that was my calling. That was my true calling. I stopped doing it because I'm fucking lazy and because I hate... Number one, and I know you're both... Jerry tells me you're both amazing. I have not seen you. I want to.
Okay.
I hate comedians. I hate... I'm not a on comedian. I don't sit at tables and do bits and I don't, you know. So
you're not the guy that after his set would love to hang out in the parking lot at the Comedy Store.
No. Like, I'm anti-entourage. Yeah, even though, you know, as Jerry will tell you, I'm a very popular guy with my childhood friends.
Yeah.
I just like to see them in, you know, in where I want. I don't want to be in that frou. And also, I'm not a late night person. I'm not a
That's a big
drinker.
Part of it. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I wish I did have the heart for it because I loved being on the stage.
Yeah, I was going to say, what got you initially?
So what got me into it initially was I got rejected from every law school. I was sitting in, I always wanted to be Woody Allen, Albert Brooks. That was my dream growing up. I wanted to write, produce, direct movies, but I did nothing of the sort ever. It wasn't in my family. It wasn't in my neighborhood. There was just nothing. So I was on my way to law school. I got rejected from everywhere. And we were at, I was with a bunch of friends at a comedy club, and some comedian was on, and like I normally do, I'm like, this guy sucks. I mean, he sucks. This is insane. One of my friends signed me up for an amateur night, I did it, and it went well, you know? Yeah. And
do you remember what you talked about?
Yeah, I remember all of my stand-up sets, you know? I had lots of stuff. I was observational, kind of, like Dennis Miller type of stuff and whatever.
But you got enough of a bug from that, even though you realized it wasn't what
I didn't
you...
have anything else to do. Yeah. I mean, I had no idea what to do. My parents were going to kill me that I wasn't going to law school, and it was just like, get a job. So it was, you know, just something to do, and I didn't really know why I was doing it. I knew no one in the business. I ended up working at New Line Cinema, but my whole career started because of stand-up, because at New Line, I was in the mailroom, and I was going to do a short film. I wrote this short film, The Pitch. Mm-hmm. There you go.
We saw it.
And I handed out flyers to everyone to come see me do stand-up. I needed to raise money for my movie. So,
and you've done stand-up how many times at this point when you're trying to get people to come see you?
30.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you about, because my hand to God, I never bombed except once, which I'll tell you about.
Nice.
So I did my stand-up act, and Mike DeLuca, who was VP of New Line at the time, and now is one of the bigs of the business, wrote, he was young at the time, he was probably 28, 30. He wrote me a check for 10 grand and said, go make a short film.
Holy
he liked
shit
my stand-up act. So I did the short film. I ended up selling it to Showtime and got into the American Film Institute, and that started. And then I quit, but I probably did stand-up in my life 50, 60 times, maybe less. All amateur nights. I mean, you know.
And the whole concept of that, of having executives from New Line come to see you when you've only done stand-up 30 times is insane.
Yeah.
Especially when they're trying to get Ninja Turtles made. You're distracting them from casting the voice of Splinter.
You know what? It was a very fortunate thing. And like
he respected the hustle, right? He just saw that you were... He dug you. Were you a cool guy in the mailroom?
I like to think he respected my stand-up, you know. But but I actually, like I said, I mean this. I mean, my stuff was smart. It was well-written.
Yeah.
And it was, you know, less reliant on any type of, you know, pageantry. But
so you weren't relying on being a midget and giving someone a lap dance at the end of your set as a cheap hat trick.
Whatever works, and I don't care. Whatever you do to get people laughing, but I did well. And you know, my first time ever doing stand up ever was at the Ice House.
Yeah,
Pasadena. Yeah,
in Pasadena. And again, my hand to God, this person right out of Hollywood, I'm 21, comes over to me and says, you're a genius. You're the next big thing. I want to sign you. So you're like, I'm 21 years old. I'm like, really? So
you're
this
like, well,
is
that's
totally true.
Works,
and she's like, I want to sit down tomorrow and I want to do this. This is not made up. And I go, I'm leaving for New Orleans tomorrow. And she's like, you call me tomorrow first thing. And we're going to talk about this. Guys, I swear on my life. I call the next day.
Is it Bonnie Hunt?
She tells me about it. She tells me she was on drugs and doesn't remember anything about what I'm talking about. I'm like, okay.
Was she an actual executive, or was she just someone like...
I have no idea. I have no idea who she was. I didn't know anybody. I was with my girlfriend at the time, and yeah. I got up, and I did it, and it felt good, by the way. I was in New Orleans going, I just got signed. I'm like,
oh, of course, you're riding
like,
that
here
high.
Here goes the career.
And
here
then,
we go.
And then my next thing, I get... I do a stand-up act, and another guy comes up. He wants to sign me, who turns out is a real guy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
He's like, you're amazing. You're going to be this, and I got an audition for you. It's so perfect for you. It's great. And I'm like, all right, I go to this audition the next day. I walk in, and I've done this on the show. Everyone looks like fucking Brad Pitt except mm-hmm. me. Everybody. It's mm-hmm. like, I'm like, am I in the right?
Yeah.
And I go into this audition, and it's... you know, there's no script. I have to improv being in between two women, and I have to keep working one and then turn into the other.
Oh,
and then
God.
At one point, I'm talking to one, the other one gets up, and a dude sits down, and I turn and I say something to them.
Right.
And I was just supposed to improv it. And I don't know, whatever I say, I say. And then the casting director is like, okay, everybody but you stay. And I swore I'd never go on another audition again, which I didn't. I wrote the pitch immediately after that, and was able to, with some childhood friend assistant, I met David Schwimmer, pre-Friends, and Ernie Hudson, and Johnny Silverman, and got some great people to do this little $11,000 short film, so that Mike DeLuca financed the bulk of. So.
Holy shit.
And one thing I love about your story is that when people see kind of a bigwigs in the business, and let's face it, you're a guy now that people want to know in this business.
I don't know about that.
Like people say, oh, well, his dad ran the studio, or his dad was an actor, whatever the hell. Like, you literally started in the mailroom.
I knew, and, you know, I just wrote with a couple of friends this Ari Gold book, and I introduced it the first chapter. It's called The Gold Standard.
It's out right now, yeah?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was my story, which was my dad knew one person in here, in this town, mm-hmm. and it was a guy in the music business, and his name was Myron Roth. And this was the only meeting I could get. And he called for 8 o'clock. I had a suit on. It was like my bar mitzvah suit. I never wear a suit. I didn't know in L.A. no one wears a suit except the agents and the losers.
Yeah. Right.
But,
yeah.
So I'm like, I go into this meeting at 8 o'clock. I swear the guy doesn't show up till 10 o'clock. We walk into the meeting, and he goes, so what do you want to do with your life? I go, to be honest, I have no idea. And he goes, well, why don't you call me when you do? And that was the end of the meeting, and I used the rage and the anger of that. But the New Line job came about from a temp agency, I didn't know anything about it. New Line was just starting to blow up. They actually were very small at the time, and I talked my way into the head of the mailroom job. So I jumped over two people, which caused a lot of resentment there. One of them turned out to be who I did the short film with. Tommy O'Haver was his name, who ended up making a bunch of good films and still directs. So, but yeah, I was in the mailroom and doing the whole thing. And
how much did you observe from the mailroom? Because I'm always curious. The Ari Gold character, like, I've heard stories that it's like based on ages that you actually.
It's based on Ari Emanuel, and you know, I observe. That's what I do.
Yeah.
I'm usually, except when I'm on a podcast, I'm usually quiet. And I'm looking at everybody and, you know, listening. But I met Ari Emanuel when we were pitching the show, and I had already written the script, a pitch as Jeremy Piven playing my agent at the time, who was a guy named Jeff Jacobs. But when I met Ari, he was so unbelievably larger than life that
over
I said,
top,
this
yeah.
is the character. So
wow. And then, like, the pilot in terms of, like, the first episode, was that what you envisioned Entourage to be, or did it go, or was that a sort of a different version of it?
It went through lots of changes, essentially the same story, but HBO was very helpful and helped guiding it in a direction, a lighter direction. Which was the smarter move. Initially, you know, I was so focused on Mark and sort of how I grew up, and it was a much tougher entourage, you know? It was they were getting in fights, and they were doing stuff.
Because based
like
off
that,
Mark and his buddies, right?
It was inspired loosely. By that, and then as we moved forward, you know, as I said, it became a more sensitive entourage, and, you know, Adrian was obviously very different than Mark, and he kind of led the way to how we were going to and mold it. So.
Yeah, he wasn't an underwear model before.
Yeah, no, we don't want to see him in his underwear.
How did you meet Wahlberg to even like get?
Well, Mark, you know, my friend from Tulane became a you know, mailroom agent's assistant. Mm-hmm. He worked for Mark's agent. They became close, and then he left and became a manager, and Mark went with him. So I met him with Mark years and years before the show. So I knew him, and I knew his group and whatever. So
and so all that kind of from these friendships that you've had, like you say, your buddy just has his logo on American Pharoah. Your other buddy introduced you to Mark Wahlberg.
Yeah, I got a buddy that manages a Panera not too far. So if we want to get some,
these are my highly successful friends. Let me assure you, a lot of the guys I grew up with, whether they're dead in jail or just complete losers, I mean, I grew up like Goodfellas neighborhood. So I had Dr. Katz living on this side and John Gotti's heroin dealer living on that side.
What?
And, for real. And you know, I mean,
was that knowledge in your neighborhood? Was that just like
I loved how I grew up, and it was interesting. You know, Wolf of Wall Street stuff. I know him from when I was
Jordan
young.
Jordan Belfort.
What?
Jordan Belfort.
Yes, I know Jordan. I saw the Wolf of Wall Street with Jordan Belfort. So,
I'm talking to.
So I grew up with a lot of interesting characters that definitely helped shape me. And you know, listen, like mafia families, when you grow up in that kind of middle to lower to middle class, I don't want to say lower because we're middle class, you know, those relationships, the houses are on top of each other, and you grow up with these guys who are essentially like your brothers. So, but the wheels up guy, I have the picture with my wheels up friend, is my friend from kindergarten. I have the picture at our bar mitzvah, and I have the picture at our 25-year reunion, which is me, him, and our friend Christian Tarantino, who when I walked in, I said, "Chris, you're not going to cause any problems tonight." He said, I've changed. You can look it up, Google it right now. He was arrested for six murders within a month of that reunion, which was only four or five years ago. Yeah, he's
get out.
He's doing life right now. Yeah, in New York.
And was that something you guys had any idea? Or like you said, you told him to behave himself.
Chris was I was kidding, and Chris, you know, I know him since I was in kindergarten. I don't know what all of his exploits were, and I loved him. He was a handsome, nice, charismatic guy. You didn't want to mess with him for sure, but would I have imagined that? No, you know, but...
Yeah.
How much of the friendships that you had growing up, and then once you and Mark start talking about the show, are you guys both pulling from your own? Because it's loosely based on his crew,
I observed his crew, and then I made it my own, you know? And Lev was very involved with helping that. But the friendships and the relationships, there's so many stories I've taken from my friends. There's so many characters I've named after my friends and elements. Yeah. So it really started as this initial Mark inspiration, and he was great enough to go, use what works, don't use what works. And he was just an awesome supporter, but, you know.
And how much of the just the core base of the characters did you know, like who you wanted? I mean, like when Kevin Dillon, did you have that type of guy in mind, or you're just...
I mean, it definitely, Mark has a real Johnny Drama who's probably, you know, got the most similarities to the Kevin Dillon guy.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So when Kevin walked in, it was like, holy shit, how is this guy not like a giant comic star? I really think he's as good as anybody. So that was just... luck.
Do those casting things happen a lot? I worked at a casting office when I first graduated for a couple of years and got to really be on the other side of it. And it's great. I love what, you know, in some of the episodes where, you know, you would be reading or auditioning Johnny Drama. But it's like that stuff does happen a lot.
Oh,
but also,
totally,
I'm curious how much from your end when you're casting does... Because you hear those stories of somebody walking in, they're like, as soon as he walked in, we fucking loved how he smelled. And like,
honestly, I mean, I always tell everybody... you're normally in or out, or certainly out within 3 seconds, sometimes before you even speak. So actors who take it personally, you're just not right for the role. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like it was with that commercial. There was no reason for me to be there. I don't look like, you know, a West Coast surfer model.
Yeah.
So there was no reason for me to be there. And I was out before I ever spoke. They just were being polite, which, you know, when you're casting 150 people a day, some people lose their patience. You know,
sure.
I have tried... I think my entire career to not do what I did on the show. But there's others, as Kevin Connelly will tell you, from his first audition of Entourage, there's other people that, you know, he was like his most uncomfortable room I've ever been in.
Oh,
so,
shit.
Wow. You know, so it all depends on who's on the other side of the table. But I try my best to make everyone feel good. But I usually know very quickly. I've made some mistakes, and I've missed out on people that I was wrong about.
Yeah, I heard you say something on, I think it was on Jerry's podcast about...
Haley?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, Haley,
Haley Joel Osment.
Yeah, that was definitely me just going, the guy from Sixth Sense, great, and I didn't really watch his tape, and it sat on my desk for 4 or 5 months, and I was desperate. I could not find anybody, and he is so far and above and away the guy that
he crushed it, dude.
Right.
Crushed it, and, you know, and again, when you see we had some great actors, and I try to make it work with some really good actors, but they didn't have whatever the thing is, that intangible for that role that you needed.
I mean, there's so many great cameos in not just the series, but also the movie. Is there anyone you've said no to?
No, I don't say no. We have Gary Busey on. I don't say
no. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But, you know,
how do you wrangle him, by the way?
He's not easy. Not easy, but...
Like, do you
got to find what planet he's on, yeah, learn the language.
We try to find a way. If they're interesting in my eyes, I try to find a way, you know? So
like for a guy like Busey, you just put the camera on him and say, guys, go around him, or is he?
Yeah, I mean, we just kind of pray, and he always delivers something interesting, you know? I mean, as Jerry will tell you, most of the scripts are all there, but right. Busey just does whatever he wants, and it sometimes is very magical. So,
super curious about your writing process. Do you write at what point into the just whole show did you start to, I don't know, just maybe really understand everybody's characters and dynamics? And
I understood everybody's characters dynamics in 5 minutes. Story has always been the hard part.
Yeah,
coming up with stories and. You know, I think most writers will tell you that, but, you know, dialogue and characters, I know these guys like the back of my hand. I knew it, you know, before the pilot was halfway done. But just figuring out how to move the plots forward, how to keep them together but give them their own stuff, it was challenging for me anyway.
Yeah. And
I was hoping I'd be rich enough after this I'd never have to write again. Did not pan out that way.
Yeah, because you never see that struggle and process from the writing side because, you know, as somebody I told Jerry, it's my favorite show.
Well, thank
so
you.
I've seen every episode probably 40 times. And to me, every time I watch a story unfold, I'm like, oh, yeah, this is... It felt like that's what should be happening.
It's interesting, you know, because people do think it's like the easiest show on earth to write, and I defy people to go sit down and actually, you know, you can make fun of it and go, oh, Vince is trying to get a movie. Go sit down and write 5 characters in 30 minutes that have as much going on as that we had. It's not easy.
Absolutely, and the thing about it that I love is that you managed to make the Hollywood problems relatable to someone who's not in Hollywood, because it's so easy to look at this guy, this Vincent Chase character, and go, he's a movie star. Yeah. Why do I care?
Yeah, and hopefully, you know, what we always try to remind people of and what those actors brought to it is that they are those working class guys who are in fantasy land. They appreciate it, but they also care about each other more than they care about all that stuff. So,
yeah, that was, I think, that's a big theme that I think a lot of dudes resonated with, because every group of dudes, women obviously are big fans of the show too, but what is there, like a split? Do you have like a breakdown of
definitely higher male, but we're trying to get every woman in that we can. I think guys really relate to it because everyone's got that kind of crew with them, you know,
and then everybody wants that crew to be experiencing, like, those first few seasons. I was living with two guys from SC where I went to school, and we'd watch it every Sunday, and every time it would end, we'd look at each other and be like, all right, somebody get fucking famous so we can go do what we just watched.
Yeah, and the truth is, you know, it's funny because that's what some of the critics who I'm like, you know, are laughably, you know, because critics, you know, they're guys who don't have friends. They're guys who sit alone and watch fucking movies all day and can't accomplish anything.
And they've got 6 different passwords to Pornhub.
But my friends that I grew up, they'll all tell you, you know, like I get a call that, you know, we're going to Camp Pendleton to meet Marines. They want to see the movie, you know, and my friend Kenny is like nice enough to donate a private jet to take us, you know, and I go, I call my friends from high school and I'm like, you want to come? This is like once in a lifetime. And it makes it much more special for me to appreciate it with guys who knew me when I like had no clue what I was going to do with my life, when I had 2 nickels, when, you know, everyone was going, what are you killing your parents? You got to get a job. You got to figure something out, you know? And, you know, I used to wake up when I was, you know, 24 years old in my freaking one bedroom apartment with 4 people living there.
Oh,
one was
shit.
Like my best friend from elementary school with a shower curtain in the living room with 2 people split up and going, what am I going to do with my life, you know? And when you get to a place where you can do something special, like watch the movie with the Wisconsin Badgers right before playing for the national championship.
Oh, yeah.
It's special stuff, and you want to share it with people that were there before.
So. Yeah, how often do you have moments like that throughout your just day where you're getting reminded of just how...
Well, like, right now with the movie out, it's crazy. You know, it feels like I'm somebody that I'm not. You got to be careful because, I mean, I'm walking in the Grove and people are like, Doug Allen, let me get a picture. My kids are watching like, who are you? Because like, obviously I'm not a celebrity, but there is a moment where people happen to recognize my face, and it's interesting. And
do you like it?
I like to feel that people are enjoying the movie, which I really do feel. You feel a buzz and... You know, the worst thing in the world is when the people that you respect are telling you, like, yeah, it's all right. Like, it's one thing to wake up and have some jerk off at the New York Times not like it. But when the people that you really know understand it, if they don't like it, that would suck. So it feels Yeah, it feels nice. Calais Campbell from the Cardinals just walked up to me and singing some of my friends. And
I mean, that show, you created like this male sort of fantasy factory in that, like, I literally have an entourage bucket list.
Right.
Like stuff I saw from the show that I'm like, well, now I'm in show business, so now I want to do. So when I went to, and I did Jimmy Kimmel Live, it was like, done. I've done an entourage thing. When I sat courtside of the Laker game, it was like, I've done an entourage thing.
Yeah, meet Doug Ellen's dog. That was like number 45 on there. Yeah.
You know what? It's that's the thing. And that's what I think some people don't get when they call these guys douchebags. They are sharing it with people who otherwise couldn't have that.
Right.
And they're not, you know, they're not trying to make anyone else feel bad about it. And they're very inclusive.
Yeah.
You know, so.
'Cause, I mean, at its core, these characters could be, or like Vince could be a guy that says, well, I'm now only going to hang out with movie stars, or I'm only, but
right.
No matter where he goes, he always takes his friends.
Absolutely.
Because he knows that's how you're going to have
absolutely.
The most fun.
Absolutely. And if you really see LeBron James or, you know, a million other ones of these guys, they do the same thing, and there's a reason for it, you know, because it gives them a sense of where they're from instead of, you know, the bullshit. So.
Yeah.
When you were writing the show, were you ever like, I want Val Kilmer to play this?
Well, Larry Charles got Val Kilmer was like, you know, one of my guys that I just idolized growing up.
Well, sure.
You get to a point,
I mean, he was in the movie Willow.
Yeah,
so
yeah, he's Brad's Brad's Oprah,
pretty much.
Come here, Pop.
Sit. Sorry, my dog's getting up.
Oh, that's good.
It's all right.
He's very well behaved.
He is good man. He's only 6 months old.
No kidding.
So,
it's like when you have like a Val Kilmer guy, you just say.
So Larry Charles is like, you want Val Kilmer for the show? I'm like, are you kidding me? And Val, you know, that was. The people still talk about that episode.
It's one of my favorite episodes. Yeah.
That's so
and
great.
Val Kilmer, he was just like one of those moments where you sit back and you watch and you're just in awe of how good this guy is. And
right.
It was fun.
Let's just not even skip over Larry Charles, though. I mean, the fact that Larry Charles is involved. I mean, like.
Yeah, Larry was on the first season, and Larry was, you know, a godsend to keep peace between, you know, me and my buddy Rob Weiss, who is my friend from junior high school, who I brought onto the show. And, you know, we're both very similar, argumentative, fearful Jews, and we just, we would be screaming at each other till 4 o'clock in the morning. We didn't know what we were doing. I mean, it didn't, by the
what
way.
What would you be fighting
really,
about? Just stuff that...
Just I mean, story ideas, and, you know, and I mean, because we're both very passionate about what we believe in. And by the way, it hasn't changed. Larry, the only bad thing about Larry was Larry told me, like, by season 6... We'd have a formula. We'd be able to hire Harvard guys that would just knock them out. We wouldn't have to do anything.
Yeah.
That never happened, and I tortured myself for the entire run of the show and the movie. You know?
There's something great, though, right? I think you do have to have like a little bit of that combativeness and guys going at it to find...
We are those guys. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So, you know, we know it, and we lived it, and it's, you know...
I was thinking, growing up in New York and saying being such a big fan of stand-up that you were, is that why you got Dice on the show?
I was a huge fan of Dice. You know, I remember the first time I saw him on the Dangerfield special.
Right.
Why are you eating my pants? And
Brad, stop doing that.
But
sorry.
Dice, you know, which it's really great to me. And by the way, one of the things I feel really great about that, and he'll tell you, I revived his entire life.
You did. He did the Woody Allen movie right after
Entourage. The Woody Allen movie, Scorsese pilot. He's got his own series now. He got his stand-up special back. And again, he thanks me. I didn't do it to help him. I did it because I loved Dice growing up. And what happened was, I don't even remember where I was, but he was at Mulberry Pizza because him and my friend Bruce Rubenstein called me and they said Dice wants to be on the show. I was like, okay, Dice is on the show. And they thought I was messing around.
Yeah.
And he's like, no, don't fuck around. Dice really loves the show. I'm like, he's on the show. There's nothing else to talk about. It's done.
Yeah.
Whatever. Let me figure out what the story is. And that was it. And he kept telling me, you don't understand, this is going to change my life. And I was like, okay, Dice, whatever, you know. But I didn't do it for that. I did it because I believed in the guy's talent. And, you know, all the actors can tell you when he was on the set, he just pops, you know.
And it totally shows because, I mean, I didn't know that he was capable of that sort of dramatic stuff and being real. And you showed a complete new side of him to the rest of the world.
Yeah, he's really was unbelievable. And I love the guy. And good people, too.
Is it hard for you when you have, like, a childhood idol, like Dice, on set to then kind of give him instruction?
It's hard because it's Dice. I mean, yeah. I have no problems. I actually screamed at him. He said no one's ever spoken to him that way. But Dice, you know, the first thing Dice did was come to me with 10 pages of handwritten rewrites. And I said, yeah, this is not going to fly. And Dice is, he really is one of the funniest people on the planet Earth. But,
yeah.
You know, and the best idea always wins. I don't care where it comes from. But, you know, Dice is, he's like me. You know, we want what we want. But, no, it wasn't hard for me to blend in with him. I've had hard ones. Like Larry David was I was very very nervous, like with Larry David on the show. Even though I love Dice, he feels somehow more like a my buddy. Where Larry felt like this, you know,
entity.
Iconic, like a Shakespeare, you know what
of
I
course.
Mean?
Mm-hmm.
So
were you nervous about like what if he was going to be a fan of what you wrote for him and just
Well,
didn't you guys just improvise that shit?
Yeah, well, what happened there is he just wanted an idea, which is the first time we ever did that. But I was nervous to give him any type of direction or say anything to him, but it turns out he was great. And I gave him one idea. Like it was something that I thought was very simple and obvious, and I didn't want to say it so that everyone was like, "I'm Larry David. Yeah, I could do that." Obviously, mm-hmm. you know. But I said something to him and he's like, "Yeah, that works." And it was a very happy moment in my life, but I love him. He was nice enough to come to my birthday party last
year.
Shut
up.
Get out.
Which freaked my dad out. And,
how's that? Like,
yeah.
Do you ever stop going, holy crap, this is my life? Does it ever become routine?
My girlfriend called Larry for a surprise party, and I walked in to a surprise party, and there's my friends from sixth grade. And one of them goes, "Holy shit, Larry David's here." And I go, "Larry David's here?" And he looks at me like I'm a weirdo now because I know him, and he's like, "Yeah, I'm here. Is that something weird about that?" Because he doesn't think I look at him as some you know, holy figure necessarily. So
If Sean Kemp showed up to my surprise party, I'd lose my mind.
I mean, it was amazing. She got Jeff Ross to roast me. So
no way.
You know, that was with Saget, and it was very very cool. So
how when Larry David, when he's on the show and you're like not wanting, are you just have to put any sort of doubts that you have of like. Him not being on board with what you're... You just have to completely trust you're going...
I didn't put any doubts aside. I stood there for 15 minutes before I said anything because I was really nervous to walk up to him. And I finally did. And if I walked up 15 minutes earlier, we would have been done 15 minutes earlier because it was very simple and he was very happy. And then they just did the scene, you know?
So that kind of never goes away, finding the balance between... Because every actor is different. Every working relationship is... I mean, figuring out like how to...
Absolutely. And
communicate
again,
with
you
them.
Know... Guys that you really are in awe of are a different story than just having a great actor. And again, Larry could not have been easier to work with. So it was all just in my head.
And do people give you any sort of like he's this or he's that? Or
no.
Don't make eye contact with Larry David?
No. He just
well, that's what they say about Danny Bonaducci. Well, you're not supposed to look Bonaducci in the eye.
Larry is nice as can be and very just warm and supportive, you know?
As you continue writing, has success made writing more difficult? Because you're not exactly like the starving artist anymore.
I hate writing. You know, I never really liked it. And I love directing. I love producing. I hate writing. Uh-huh. It's always very hard for me. I'm very, very hard on myself. So I just go over things over and over and over. It kind of like a OCD person, which I might be. But, you know, just very... Very torturous process, even writing stupid shit, even stuff people hate, you know?
Do you start with this, is it blank piece of paper, bullet point ideas for stories or
I usually start
dialogue?
Writing, which is the worst thing in the world, and I back myself into corners, and then I try to figure out what the story is, which is why I always hated when people said it was predictable, because I couldn't figure it out, so I don't know how they did. But
when the series was done, was there always the thought that there was going to be a movie, or did that come later?
I mean, HBO made a deal with me for a movie script. I didn't really think there was going to be a movie. I ran into Mark, and he was like, "Where's the script? You know, everybody's waiting." I was like, "Who's waiting?"
At what point in the show is
this? A year and a half after we were done. I didn't know if there was an appetite for it at all. So he said, "Write it. I guarantee I'll get it made." So I wrote it, and here we are.
How many drafts of the?
Lot.
Yeah,
lot. One completely thrown in the garbage that I thought was great.
Get out. I mean,
nobody liked it.
That's where Vince opens up a discovery zone in Detroit for only fat kids.
It's one of those things. Sometimes I say, you know, I'm not really sure. I mean, I've written stuff that people I really respect are like, "You are un-fucking believable how good you are." And I've written stuff that the same people are like, "I can't stand this." I'm like, and I'm not sure I know the difference. It's very subtle. subtle differences that they, mm-hmm. you know, one of the very difficult things about screenplays. I'm still not sure I'm wrong. Might have been a better movie. I'm not going to sit here and tell you it wouldn't. I don't know.
Right.
But, you know, I wrote a script in AFI when I was at AFI, and my producer, you know, we were sort of students, but there's professionals there too. And he was friends with a very successful screenwriter who had written all these huge movies. And the guy who wrote the movies wrote about my 12-page short film for the American Film Institute.
What?
He wrote an entire letter to my friend how awful this was, how mean-spirited it was, how terrible it was. And I remember just going like,
why?
Holy shit. And then I shot the film.
Yeah.
You know, and he wrote me an apology that he had read the tone completely wrong.
Wow.
And it was one of those real learning lessons for me that you got to keep going with what you believe. Obviously,
yeah.
It becomes hard if the people who have the money don't believe it. But you just got to keep going with your instincts and see where they take you.
And so that's just a constant battle of when you're like, I think this is the moment. This is what this is the story. But there's people being like.
Yeah, but I've long, you know, I used to be very like. This is what I'm doing. This is what it is. I don't care anymore. I'm like, mm-hmm. not that I don't care. I know there's a lot of ways to slice it. You know what I mean? And I'm willing to continue to work until all the people that I trust are on board with it.
Yeah.
So I'm not, I don't go in like, this is it.
Yeah.
Fuck you.
Yeah.
You know?
And do you think sort of where you came from, you kind of allow people to do that now, or like you kind of take your ego out of it?
I mean, I definitely take my ego out of it. I definitely don't. I think it was more fear when I started. You know, you're mm-hmm. like, someone doesn't like something. You're like, okay, what do I do now?
Yeah,
sure. They're going to fire me. Someone else is going to do it. Like, so now I do. I take my ego.
I'm
going
to have to go back to the Bonnie Hunt show.
Yeah, exactly.
Do you ever think about your skills on that show contributing to your skills?
No. I did nothing on that show. I was there for 6 weeks. She didn't. Talk to the writers. You know, I was on there with my friend Chris Henchy, who's
I just had dinner with Chris in New York.
We've both gone on to successful times, but Bonnie was it was the worst experience, because what happened with Bonnie was it's funny because this is classic Hollywood too. I never got into the show, but Bonnie, I did a movie with Bonnie that I wrote and directed, and Bonnie thought I was so funny that she told me I had to act in it with her, and we did a scene together, whatever.
Yeah.
Anyway, the movie was done for $1.5 million. Universal picks it up, and it's, you know, I'm on my way to success in 1998. I'm getting offers,
oh,
which
shit.
Don't happen.
Yeah.
Right.
And then this movie comes out that cost $1.8 million. It mm-hmm. opens up at $2.3 million, which I thought was a success.
You're like, hey, but, you made money.
But everyone thought it was a giant studio movie. People thought it was a big movie.
This
was Kissing a Fool.
Yeah.
And people thought it was a Universal Studios movie, not a $1.5 million movie.
Yeah,
so
right.
I swear to God, I was unemployable. Nothing. I was getting ready to take my LSATs again. And then I'm like, you know what? Bonnie Hunt was doing a show. And, you know, I called her up, which is, I have the great...
You got Bonnie Hunt's cell phone number?
I called up Bonnie Hunt to do this show. And she hired me again. I was doing pretty okay. And then all of a sudden, mm-hmm. I'm dead. She hired me to be the lowest level person on the show, which, okay, I was going to take some help.
Get a job,
pie.
Yeah.
I made two movies that played around the world. I'd made enough money to buy myself a house in Beverly Hills, and I'd done okay, but I'm like, okay.
Good for you to step back and take that, though.
And, you know, on my movie, which was a big moment for me, she told me, you know, Doug, only you and Cameron Crowe have I not rewritten everything they did. So I love your writing. And I called my parents up. I'm like, Bonnie Hunt said me and Cameron Crowe, this and that. So this is like a bad Hollywood story. So now cut to, I'm on the Bonnie Hunt show. She honestly doesn't even acknowledge us. Chris and I forget who else is there, but we've certainly proven that we were worth at least saying hello to in the morning.
Sure,
but she didn't.
Sure.
So we sat there for about 10 weeks, and then she kept telling us, when the show gets picked up for more, she wants to really do it in the beginning. When the show gets picked up for more, then she'll really involve everybody else. Like, great. So I'm at the, every day was like, I wrote Entourage while I was on the show, actually.
Oh,
I wrote
shit.
That script while I was there, because I was doing nothing there.
Wow.
We were playing practical jokes on each other. Like, I bought a license plate frame and put it on Chris's car that said, I'm married to Brooke Shields. and Chris put, I love cock on my.
Quite the jump.
Yeah,
which I ended up using. I used in the show.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, you know, I drove around with that for days, and people kept looking at me. I'm like, what's going on here?
Man, everyone's seen Kissing a Fool, huh?
Yeah. So, So anyway, so Chris calls me and tells me that the show just got picked up, and Bonnie came in, give him the thumbs up. Can I get some champagne? We're all going to celebrate. Yeah. And I kind of had a feeling like this was like not the right thing to do.
Yeah, yeah.
And like, I buy a bottle of champagne, and by the time I get there, there's like two writers crying. Chris is shaking his head, and I walk in, and Bonnie fires everybody.
Oh,
what?
Now, bad enough. Actually, clean house. She didn't fire one person. My hand to God, the words she says are, guys, I don't want anyone to take this personally because you're all great, but only Frank over here and Cameron Crowe have I not rewritten in my life. So that was there's a 3-year gap between those two comments, which happened.
Yeah.
And I then said some very choice words to her, which I think even Chris was like, whoa, whoa.
Well, you're only going to get so many chances to tell off Bonnie Hunt.
You know, I
so Jesus.
I think that's going to be the name of your autobiography.
You know, I hate Bonnie Hunt. You know, betrayed by Bonnie Hunt.
Betrayed by the Bond.
Yeah.
Well, I think you brilliantly fed. There's so many stories in the movie, and I feel like you did such a great job of not only pulling like from, you know, how the show ended, you know, and giving everybody like a great... you know, story to have in the movie, and without spoiling it too much, because this will go up Monday, and the movie's just came out.
Just came out. Stays out.
Are you going to? It will. Are you going to make the Vince movie that you guys?
You know what we talked about.
Show the trailer for.
It would definitely be fun to do it. But I don't know.
That was the craziest thing ever.
Yeah, it was fun.
Please don't spoil it for me, because I'm about to go see the movie right after we're done.
Oh, you haven't
this.
Seen it yet?
I haven't seen it yet.
I hope you're bringing a lot of people with you.
Listen, it was funny. At the charity dinner that I met you at last night, I told Kevin Connolly that I was going to go see the movie, and Kevin goes, yeah, bring 7 of your friends. I go, why does it have to be 7, dick? Just because I'm a dwarf.
Yeah.
And then he had one of those moments where he's like, I could have said any number. Why did I say 7?
That's fucked.
You guys got to give me a few stories from this charity dinner last night. This charity dinner last night.
Great charity
bananas.
Dinner for, you know, Bob Saget invited us for this Scleroderma.
Yeah.
I hope that I pronounced it right. But
Scleroderma?
Yeah. I'm going to start a new podcast called Can You Pronounce Diseases?
It's tough. It's a tough one.
Yeah.
But meaningful to
of course,
Bob and his family. And it's really a great event. And
it was, you know, it was fantastic. Yeah. There was a live auction where you and Kevin were going back and forth on a trip to New York.
Do you know what he did or no? Did you realize what he did?
I have no idea what he did.
I mean, I love you, Kevin. It was the dumbest thing I've ever seen in my life.
You like 5 more minutes? Is that
we're,
cool?
We're bidding on this thing.
Yeah.
And we're up to, I don't remember, 8,000, 9,000, whatever it was. Mm-hmm. And Kevin's like, you want to split it? And I'm like, sure. You know, so I think I bid 9,000. And Bob Saget goes, going once, going twice. And Kevin goes, 10. And... I'm like, are you a fucking idiot? Like, we're splitting it.
Yeah, you had it for 9,000.
I had it for 9,000. Now, and then, and you know, Kevin is the best. He's like a brother to me, but he gets all defensive. He knows he fucked up, but he gets all defensive. He's like, it's a charity, bro. I'm like, look, I understand it's
the ultimate,
charity, but we can just, you know, we can give him 100,000.
Like, yeah.
I mean, but we were bidding. That's part of the fun of the auction is to get the best price.
Yeah.
And then if you want to donate a separate $1,000, you can do that. But
right.
I didn't authorize that bid. So, but well, it was pretty funny.
Yeah. I mean, you had that memory. I had the memory of being outbid on a trip to the Bahamas by Queen Latifah. So, I mean,
She went high.
How many times is that going to happen in your life? Yeah, you're like, well, I lost out to Queen Latifah. That's the name of my autobiography.
Yeah. I like it.
We're there, and you said, so Kimmel and Saget hosted this thing, yeah?
It's Saget's charity.
Yeah,
Kimmel hosted the auction.
Yeah.
Which
I think it's Bob thing, though, but it was great. You know, Don Rickles was there.
Yeah, do you know? I mean, you've got to know Rickles.
Got to know who?
Rickles.
I've met him a couple times. Yeah. I said hello, but, you know, I don't think he knows who I am. But I love him. I've seen him probably, honestly, 15 times in my life.
Yeah.
On stage. So, you know, everyone from Don Rickles to John Mayer to Queen Latifah to Jack Black. So it was a very, very cool event.
Were there any big names there? Or were
just a couple of strugglers.
Kevin Connolly.
Ferrara. Yeah, nice.
Now, I've met Rickles one time in my life, and while I was there at the charity, he makes eye contact with me and calls me over. I'm like, oh my God, he remembers meeting me 8 years ago backstage at Jimmy Kimmel. This is unbelievable. So I walk over, he goes, I just wanted to tell you, I watch your show on HBO every Sunday night. You're very talented. I'm like, wait, is he punking me or does he actually think I'm Dinklage?
Yeah, you know, and now I feel bad. I have a Dinklage line in the movie. And
oh, God, please.
Oh, I mean, wait, are you insulting Dinklage? Because
no.
If you do.
No, because I love Dinklage. He was on the show and he was awesome.
Yeah.
It's not an insult to Dinklage. It's an insult to Connolly, but...
Perfect. But,
now, I'm wondering, too, when getting Dinklage for the movie, like, if he couldn't have done it, I'm wondering how far down you would have gone before my man Brad here would have stepped into the audition room.
Brad would have been next, you know?
Yeah. There
it's,
you go.
It's great. We got, you know, we got Pete in the show early on, you know, before he becomes a big star. You know?
No
he
kidding.
Had done the...
He had done, I think, Elf movie, and that's, like...
No, he didn't even do Elf yet. He had done...
Nope.
The Station Agent.
Oh, right. Shit.
Yeah.
It was a great little independent film.
Great independent film. And we saw him in it, and I guess I called him up, and he was awesome and willing to have fun.
Now, you said you've never said no to someone. Has anyone said no to you?
Lots and lots of you. I've never called Pete. I would. Pete would be great. Yeah. But, I mean, everybody from Jimmy Page to...
Now, do you take phone numbers out going, no way am I going to call this guy?
I don't call them personally, obviously, unless I somehow get a connection to him. We call the agent.
Yeah.
But even the relationships, and then we'll wrap this up, the relationships I feel like is such a big part of it that you've hit on a bunch. And you told a story, I think, on Jerry's, and maybe there's a shortened way to tell, but the way that you got Bono for...
Well, we had Bono, Brian Burns, who's Eddie Burns' brother.
Right.
He got Bono the first time. Mm-hmm. The second time is the real interesting story. But the first time... The Dodgers turned us down, and I was, again, in one of my panics. What are we going to do now? And I told Brian Burns, who knows Bono, go get U2. Stop fucking around and go get U2. But I was joking, and then he calls back. They'll do it. So we got U2.
Wow.
But then, cut to 8 years later, the series finale, Matt Damon's doing the show.
Mm-hmm.
And Matt says, you know, Bono's going to do it. He's going
to
do an eye
chat. Try to get Vince to donate.
He's going to do an eye chat for the charity with him. So you shoot the computer... blank, and then we go get Bono. But then Matt Damon leaves town, and I have no idea where Bono is, how I'm calling him. I don't have his fucking number, and I'm like, what do I do? And my friend Will McDonough, who's Tom Brady's friend, he's like, I'm going to Dublin. Just give me the script. I'll get it shot there.
Jesus.
Like, get it shot there.
What are you going to do?
Like, he's like, I'm going to the U2 concert. I'm like, so you know him? You're going to walk up to him? He's like, just give me the script. I'll get it done. So I wake up at 4 o'clock in the morning, and I have this video from Bono that they shot with, like, his crew, you know, which works fine, except he has done it, like, either he's never seen the show or he was, you know, it wasn't in his right mind. He does it in a very weird way, and he's talking to Vince on the phone. He's like, Vincent Chase.
So, like, what if he thought it was some Halloween special you guys were doing?
Like, Jacob Marley, like the Bono of Christmas Past or something.
So I wake up and I'm like, I'm in a panic. I'm like, what am I going to do? I call Will. I go, Will, I can't use this. Yeah. We're airing in 4 weeks. I have to get this done. He's like, here's this guy's number, whatever. I email him like a 2-page. I am so sorry if I could talk to you for 90 seconds.
Yeah.
I know that we can
knock tell you how not to
easy,
ruin my show.
You know? Yeah. I mean, I don't want to say
yeah, for sure.
Anything,
yeah, yeah.
But, you know, I don't even think I got on the phone with him. I think I just emailed. I go, this should be as real and grounded as you can make it, as if you're having this conversation with Matt. Don't try to be funny. Don't try to be anything. Just have the conversation. And I got it back the next day. And
wow.
Good God.
Amazing. You know, and you two, you know, which is
that and
top
you guys,
five bands to have them. And,
yeah. Yeah.
Unbelievable. And you guys, I think, again, I heard on Jerry's podcast where you said that you guys, like, filming that episode at the concert was so run-and-gun, guerrilla style.
Oh, yeah.
And even having him, you didn't even know that he was what. Well, yeah,
I didn't know when he was going to say "Happy Birthday, Johnny Drama," and then he said it in Spanish, and we weren't even sure. And the lights were going down, and I'm looking at Dylan like, just "Go crazy!" You know, I mean, we didn't know what was happening, and then we saw it; and it was magical. You know,
because you guys were all in the crowd, right?
I was standing next to the guys, and I'm on a sidekick. That's how long ago this is.
No,
and I'm
kidding.
Talking to my whole crew. We weren't allowed no cameras on the floor, so they were all around the upper echelon. So I don't even know what the camera's seeing, and I'm talking to my crew. And I'm like, you know, typing away on my Sidekick, which, by the way, is still the easiest device to type on my own.
Little shout out.
Yeah, shout out to Sidekicks.
So I don't know what happened to them, but but that was unbelievable. And when we got the footage 3 days later, because it was a Friday, we couldn't get it till Monday, it was It was magical.
Yeah, wow. That shit makes the... I mean, it's that stuff, too, when the episode ends that you're just like, again, looking at my roommates being like, hey, I got to stop playing Wolverine at Universal Studios. You got to stop working at fucking Chipotle, and we got to...
You know, I did... You know, I always tell the story. I lived with... I probably shouldn't talk about it, but I lived with a girl from high school,
mm-hmm.
and she was the most go-getter, loud Long Island girl. Her name was Chantel Luttenberg.
Oh, my God. Could not get more Long Island.
Long Island name
I would
ever.
Wake up. My first 6 months out here, I didn't know where to go. I didn't know what to do. And every day I would wake up to Chantel on the phone following up on her resumes. And she'd be like, hi, this is Chantel Luttenberger, Chantelluttenberger, blah, blah, blah. That's Chantel, C-H-A. And I would go, shut the fuck up. And she would walk out of that apartment every morning and go, you're never going to amount to anything.
Whoa.
Never.
I'm going to get a job at Bed Bath & Beyond, and you'll be begging me for towels.
And by the way, I believed her. I'd be like, I don't know. I had no idea what to do. Zero. There was so many days, which is like hanging out with Mike Young, eating 3-hour breakfast, going, what are we going to do?
How are we going to do this?
Yeah,
at what point do you just finally, I mean, I guess you're saying like, what am I going to do? But then you always, there's only so long you can sit in that space before you just put pen to paper or try
that's
to.
That's what I did. I made the short film that changed my life. I'm not going to tell you it changed my personality because I still say, like, what am I going to do if this movie doesn't go, if this doesn't do this, if this doesn't do that? So it's a never-ending battle. Fear motivates me. Anger and fear, that's kind of my two emotions. So,
yeah, good call.
So that's pretty much it.
Thank you so much for doing this.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank
you. This is, you're the fucking best, and this is a giant treat for both of us.
You got it.
Real quick, from the movie, favorite moment making it, or from the show, favorite episode? I know those are two like giant questions, but
I mean, I don't want to not sell the movie because I had such a great time making the movie. But shooting at Yankee Stadium with my father and my children and 40 or 50 of my childhood friends all as extras, and having run of Yankee Stadium with my buddy Mark DeShera and A-Rod, who I don't know as well, but like to be on that field,
right?
With all, everyone I care about, like watching me, you know,
it's like that was that. It's like that's your make-a-wish.
Yeah, I mean, it really was pretty special. So
that's amazing. Well, I can't wait to see the movie. I'm dead serious when I say I'm going right from here to go see it.
And I'm dead serious when I say it's fucking incredible.
Thank you.
At the screening, I've already seen it since then, and it's awesome. Even if you haven't seen the show, it's just you did a great job of just like everything makes sense. You know who everybody is. It's fun as fuck. It's shot beautifully.
So all I wanted to do when this movie ends is people go, I love hanging out with those guys, and I want to hang on the more. That's it. It's not, you know, and again, I do think it's a very realistic portrayal of Hollywood. But all I want is for you to have a good time and go, I got away from whatever my life is for an hour and a half, and I really enjoyed myself.
And if you don't like it, Bonnie Hunt wrote the movie. So.
Exactly.
All right. Thanks, Doug. Thanks a lot,
Doug. My dog's biting me.
So, that's the show. Thanks for listening to the About Last Night podcast with Brad Williams and Adam Ray. Boy, they're a lot of fun, huh? Why don't you subscribe on iTunes to this fucking podcast? Give them a 5-star rating so this midget and this Jew can feel good about themselves for a couple minutes. Also, get on your iPhone or Android and get the podcast app. You can also listen to it on Stitcher or aboutlastnightpodcast.com, where you can hear past episodes with great guests like Lisa Kudrow, Paul Feig, Kevin Nealon, Bob Saget, Dion Cole, Chris D'Elia, Adam Devine, Michael McDonald, Jaleel White, Bud Friedman, Steve-O, Harlan Williams, Tom Arnold, Ron Funches, Rick Glassman, Blake Anderson, Anders Holm, Jessamay Peluso, Joey McIntyre, and many, many more. I'm Tony Danza. Thanks for listening to the About Last Night podcast. Good night. That's it, right? You got it?
Sweet. Boy, it smells good in that booth, by the way. What kind of candle is that? Hanukkah Willow? Nice.
If you like listening to comedy, try watching it on the internet. The folks behind the Sideshow Network have launched a new YouTube channel called Wait For It. It's got interviews with comedians like Reggie Watts, Todd Glass, Liza Schlesinger, I've been friends with her for 10 years. One of the funniest people out there, and I still have a hard time with the last name, Liza. Our very own Owen Benjamin, that's me, takes you on a musical journey down internet rabbit holes and much more. You don't have to wait any longer. Just go to youtube.com/waitforitcomedy. There's no need to wait for it anymore because it's here and it's funny. And I love you.